Hi, everyone. Welcome to week six of the Montana's 69th legislative session. My name is Gabby Crevett. I'm the communications director with the Montana Democratic Party. Here with me every week is Shannon O'Brien, former candidate for statewide office, former state senator, and of course, former educator. Shannon, good to have you with us.
Hey, Gabby. I'm excited about today's show. We had an interview with Senator Susan Weber, she's truly a wise woman, and she's a whip in the Senate, and she shares some fascinating insights.
Awesome. Looking forward to that. But right off the top, I just want to start the show with, we have some chaos in Helena that, of course, we're going to go over later in the show, and we have chaos in Washington, D.C. We had some national headlines that are hitting us home here in Montana. The U.S. Forest Service will fire roughly 3,400 federal employees across every level of the agency. Of course, those are jobs here in Montana, folks losing work.
Yeah, Gabby, it's just chaos in Washington, and you know, I'll share with you, my perspective is it's intentional, it's designed for fear, and it's not okay. And it's a power grab. And quite frankly, it's unconstitutional. But I will say this is, pay attention to the federal level, if that's your jam, if that's what you want to do, but use that as fire in the belly to act more locally where you can have a positive impact. What's happening in our legislature, there are things that we can have some control over by communicating with legislators. And we do not want our legislature to reflect what's taking place in Washington. And we do not want our Republican right wing to have permission from our current president of the United States to do those kind of power grab moves.
Transitioning to the legislature, let's bring it back to Helena. Let's get into all the news. But first, happy Valentine's Day, Shannon. In honor of the holiday, I'm asking you, what bill do you love right now?
Oh, I knew you'd ask me something like this. So many bills, tough to choose from. And you know me, I'm a sucker for a good education bill. There's an early numeracy bill of Representative Romano's that's really great. I fundamentally believe that the panacea to all of our struggles in society is simply to invest in early learning and kindergarten readiness. But alas, I'm going to choose the STARS Act as my favorite bill. It's House Bill 252, and legislators have been working on it for a long time. It significantly boosts teacher pay so that we can address the teacher shortage crisis.
Great. Is that a bipartisan bill? Is that a...
Yeah, I'd be really surprised if it doesn't pass. Actually, Melissa Romano is a co-sponsor on it, and there are lots of co-sponsors on it. I think the governor is really, really interested in solving this problem. It's really a nonpartisan issue.
Well, I have a bill that's getting some good loving this week, and that's Senate Bill 171, introduced by our beloved Dave Fern of Kalispell. This redirects a portion of Montana's coal tax trust fund to support the development of affordable housing. This bill is making its way to the House now, and we're hoping to see more bipartisan support, ensuring that Montanans have access to stable and affordable homes. Shannon, I love this for us. I love this for Montanans.
Yeah, Gabby, the coal trust brings in about 50% of all tax revenue from each ton of coal, and it puts it into a trust. And then the legislature directs the revenue from that trust itself. So this would shift that a bit. Certainly, housing is a big part of the economy.
Great. So we have a few other really important updates this week. And the first one I want to flag is Medicaid expansion. What happened this week with Medicaid expansion? It feels like Democrats are ready to take a little one victory lap, right? It's not over yet, but...
Yeah, we're really, really excited. Actually, two victory laps, we'll say. And this was taking place in the Senate. There were two bills that would, they were just bad bills. One ended Medicaid expansion altogether. And when we talk about Medicaid expansion, we're talking about people who are making under $21,000 a year. So this is for a lot of Montanans, about 80,000 people. And it's a high priority for Democrats to keep this going. So we killed that bill on the Senate floor. There was also another wonky bill for Medicaid expansion that had all these stipulations. I don't want to jinx anything, but those two Republican bills died, and we're really very, very hopeful that this bipartisan coalition in the Senate will see it through. The big, they're calling it the HELP Act, that made it through the House will be in Senate. We'll have a Senate hearing coming up on the 17th, I think it is.
Well, thanks for those updates, Shannon. There were a few other bills this week that received hearings that I wanted to flag for you. House Bill 305 would create a mobile home park dispute resolution program and require landowners to notify residents if a park is listed for sale, providing them the opportunity to purchase the land for themselves. So I have a clip of Representative Carlin talking about the bill in that hearing.
I have constituents, when I've knocked doors, with sand in their water, with sewage backing up into their home. I have constituents just within a few months that had their park, without them knowing, getting sold to an out-of-state company, without them even knowing it. And I think that this bill will not solve every problem, but what it will do is provide a level playing field to make sure that we can balance the two private property rights, the private property right of the Montanan living in the home that they purchased and pay property taxes on, and the property right of the park owner.
Yeah, Representative Carlin is a superstar in so many ways, and he is able to articulate, quite frankly, how out of touch so many of us are with the reality that so many Montanans are living. And that painted a really clear picture of, you know, sewage and sand and water. And, you know, he's really good. And he brings things to the table that are nonpartisan issues that he know, you know, he's not looking for glamour. He's looking to get work done. And yeah, I'm so impressed with him. And he's just a nice guy too.
Okay, quick question for you, Shannon.
Yeah.
So the school choice bill, it looked like, so it's had two hearings, and then it was, this is where I need some help with civics, it passed executive action.
So that bill in particular is a, you know, I could go on about it. It's unfair for public school kids and for their parents, for that matter. It takes money from those public schools and puts it toward private schools, homeschool settings. You know, those some of those programs have minimal oversight or assurances that those kids in those schools are really learning and getting the basics. I recently read that somewhere are over 70% of those people who are recipients of, you know, we call them voucher bills, because they're essentially giving people vouchers. They're in the higher income brackets and they're already attending the private schools. So essentially it's just taking taxpayer money away from the public schools and giving handouts to our wealthiest families and a few others.
Right. Well, as you mentioned, this bill, then it was an executive action, and we have some commentary from Representative Eric Matthews out of Bozeman. I'll roll that clip for you.
We have put a lot of effort into adding choice into our public school system, and I appreciate the work that some of our distinguished representatives on this committee here have done to try to increase choice in our schools, and I support those public choice options 100%. This does not do that. It passes taxpayer dollars along to other schools, and that's evident in the fiscal note with the gap, the funding that comes out of it over time. The dollars aren't going directly, but a tax reduction for someone comes right out of the general fund. We can hear all the rhetoric that it doesn't have a, a direct cost, but it does. And we will end up with two different school systems, one for the haves and one for the have-nots. In the long run, it's not a new game plan. This has happened across the country. And we can see in places where there's racial segregation that happened through this. In Montana, it will likely be economic segregation that happens. And we don't want that for our state.
We should keep a close eye on this bill. It passed out of education committee with a one vote, barely by one vote. It passed out of the House second reading by two votes. Well, it's 51 to 48. There was somebody absent and they probably would have voted in favor of it. So by one vote. And then now it just went to appropriations subcommittee for education, and there it passed by one vote. So keep a close eye on this. This is House Bill 320. It's not good for our kids.
All right, coming up next, we have Shannon's interview with Senator Weber. Before that, I just want to play this clip we have of Senator Weber in action last week speaking against Senate Bill 114. So this bill would require the Ten Commandments to be on a large poster displayed in all public school classrooms. Of course, districts could use state dollars to purchase these displays. Well, here's what Senator Weber had to say about it.
You know, we have 150 years of suffering. My race has 150 years of suffering at the hands of federal government and the church. No matter how you market this, no matter how you say this is the way that we should live, the symbol is always there for my people. And I have to stand here before you and say that not on my watch, not on my watch will I allow the Indian children of Montana to suffer more indignities.
Okay, you're getting me all fired up, but I'll tell you what, this bill should have been voted down because the motion failed 25 to 25 on the Senate floor. You have to have a majority, right? So it would have been 26 to 24 would have been a pass. So somehow it made it back into executive action in committee. And I want to point out that it's in the Judiciary Committee. Why on earth would an education bill like this requiring the Ten Commandments in classrooms be in Judiciary and not Senate Education? And the reason that that is, and it's wrong, is that the Senate leadership, they assign bills to committees. And what they do, the committee on committees who create each committee, they stack the committees. And so Judiciary is stacked with many more Republicans than Democrats. And the Senate Education Committee has some people who are reasonable, in my humble opinion. And this bill might not make it through Senate Education, but leadership knows they'll make it through Judiciary. So that's why it was assigned there. And it made it back through Judiciary on a 4-2 vote. So keep an eye on it. It's a bad bill.
It's a bad bill indeed. But on that note, let's get to your interview with Senator Weber.
We have a good friend of mine, a former colleague and dear friend, Senator Susan Weber, who is a whip and from Browning, Montana. And we are so thrilled to have you. Welcome to the podcast.
Oh, well, thank you. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. It's so nice. And for our listeners, I'll just share that Senator Weber and I were whips together last legislative session. And, in so many ways, amidst the chaos of the legislative session, you really become bonded. You really become friends. We hold each other up for sure. Hold the rest of the caucus together and work across the aisle and do what we can. So let's just launch into it then. Lots of topics, lots of bills, lots of things moving through the Senate. Things are getting momentum now in the Senate. There are a number of bills that have already gone through the House and have gone through the Senate. Do you want to talk first? Can you share a little bit about some of the things that are happening around children? I know that you've spent a lot of time advocating for and prioritizing children and families. Do you want to talk a little bit about that?
Okay, so SB 107 basically is a preventive measure. We've had something like 14 bills, three on a national level and 11 on the state level. And they all are around reporting, you know, building statistics. Well, we know there's a problem if there's so many bills that had that. So we know there's a problem from missing and murdered Indigenous or else just missing children. And so this was the only preventive bill, a preventive measure from the legislature saying, okay, OPI, this is in your court. You're the one that has jurisdiction or the ability to influence young minds. So why not have the school do this? We already know there's a problem. All of these bills are there. We already know there's a problem. Now we need to find something to prevent it. And why not our children? And so that's sitting there right now. It passed through the Senate. Now it's sitting in the House, and I'm just waiting for a hearing in the House Education. And that should be up sometime. I'm hoping by early next week. And I just had another bill that was Senate Bill 180, and that was just to ask a family court to consider the heritage of a child when they're the heritage and culture of a child when in areas of divorce. Okay, so why is that important? Well, ICWA, the Indian Child Welfare Act, and MICWA, Montana Indian Child Welfare Act, they don't deal with divorce. There's nothing in there for divorce. What they deal with is if the child is taken out of its culture and placed somewhere else, then that's what ICWA and MICWA deal with. But in cases of divorce, when the family court is basically looking at which parent will be the custodial parent, there's 11 things that the judge may consider. They don't have to consider them, but I added one more, and that was to at least look at the heritage of the child, the heritage and culture of the child when they're placing it, when they have two different, you know, parents. And it could be, you know, maybe if you're Jewish and if you're Catholic or Indian and non-Indian. So I'm just asking them to consider the child's heritage and specifically in Native American cases, which basically augments ICWA and MICWA requirements in cases. And so that the custodial parent cannot, I guess, take away or omit the child's heritage when they're raising them. So they have to take that into consideration. This actually came out of an actual case out of Salish and Kootenai, where the mother was Indian, the father was non-Indian. He was Christian, and she wasn't. But he had all the means to take care of the child, and so they went to court, and he could take care of the child financially and everything else. But he didn't want his children to know anything about their culture, their mother's culture. And so the mother said, no, they're Indian children. They're my children. I want them to at least, if I can't have them, then I want them to at least know about their culture. And so there was an issue there. So that's all that bill does is ask the family court to take into consideration the ethnicity of the child.
That's great. I think that these are details I think that a lot of people, especially non-natives, wouldn't ordinarily think about. And, you know, the vital importance of maintaining the culture generation after generation is critical. And we lose sight of how it's lost. and how it has been lost. And would you be willing to talk just a little bit about your boarding school legislation from last year?
Yes, of course. I was talking about boarding school. Okay, so last session I had SJ6, which it was basically asking Congress to put aside a day of remembrance for the children that died in Indian boarding schools, and gotta say Montana Indian children that died in Montana Indian boarding schools, those that survived and their descendants, because there is such a thing as cultural trauma. And it goes from generational trauma that goes from generation to generation. And we see it now. We know what we're looking at. Before, it was just like, oh, that happened to grandma. But the things that happened to grandma or grandpa follow them, how they raised their children, and then their children raising their children, and their children raising their children. So all this trauma that started in boarding schools, and I have to say, to me, that my opinion is that was the flashpoint of the issues that we are suffering today. There's still residual effects of boarding school. Okay, I'm a survivor of boarding schools. Boarding schools are was in the mid-60s, early 70s when boarding schools, when any boarding schools no longer existed. So I was that last generation of Indians that had to go to a boarding school. I went to Cupang Creek Boarding School that was run by the Bureau of Indian Education, BIE. But I was fortunate in the time that I went there. I went there probably about 5 years. And from, I think, third grade all the way up to junior high. And I was fortunate because by then they had child abuse laws. So what my mother went through, my grandmother and my grandmother before her went through, and I say my grandmother's because I'm a woman, I'm talking from a woman's perspective, but my grandfather's as well, went through was, abuse, sexual, mental, physical abuse, and there was no one to advocate for them or stop them at all. And so it was by the Catholic Church and I shouldn't say just the Catholic Church, because the Methodists were on my reservation as well. And they ran the Willow Creek School just outside Browning. It's just probably about 2 miles outside Browning right now. And there's still the main girls' building there. And so with the church and the federal government, and having to be forced into this new life, we were survivors, but we're all getting well in our 60s. And so the next generation, my children, my grandchildren, and my great-grandchildren, will never have to experience what we experienced. So hence, I put together SJ6 to ask the federal government for that day of remembrance. And that was just to start the process of healing. Yes, we know it went on. There's books and film and everything else that went on. Government documents that said this is what happened. And so we know it happened. And now we just need to heal. We need to start to heal. And so my generation, now that we have a voice, then we can start that healing process.
That's powerful. And Indigenous Peoples Day has been a topic that I know has been brought up before. And it seems like that would be part of the healing process as well. Yes?
Yes, yes. Indigenous Peoples Day. It's just not... Well... Now we know that, what Columbus was in the very, actually, he was kind of a sadist. But the point is that now that we can speak, we have a voice, we can speak of how this affected us all the way from Columbus all the way to today. That Indigenous Peoples Day is basically just to celebrate our survival. That's what it means to me, that we are still here after all the atrocities, after everything that happened to us, we're still here today. Indigenous Peoples Day was intended to just bring awareness to your neighbors. You know, it's not to be to have people feel guilty about what was done in the past, you know, and we can, just like anything, we can look at the past so that we don't repeat what's going on in the future, but we also understand, now we have a good understanding of what our neighbors are going through. And that in itself is powerful. That's power that we have at hand, just to understand who your neighbor is. And that eliminates a lot of the racism, the discrimination. You know, there's bad people in every race, every group, every community. But the good parts outweigh that.
Yeah. Yeah. And if we look for the similarities and not the differences, we can learn from each other and connect and that kind of thing. Thank you so much for being on our podcast. And look forward to watching you. I know we have some clips that we showed of you on the Senate floor. And Gabby says, you're just crushing it. And I think so, too.
Hey. Oh, thank you. I just really appreciate you. You know, we miss you here. Oh, man, we had a group. And just like what you said, you know, initially, there's only, you know, 150 of us. Or there's very few of us that have had this experience. And so we build that relationship, we build that camaraderie, we build that love for one another and understanding. And so you'll always be part of us.
Thank you. Thank you. All right, take care. Appreciate
Bye.
Your Bye.